as we get started this morning, I need your help. I need to know where you're at as a congregation this morning. And so I want you to do an exercise with me, okay? No calisthenics are involved. The only thing you can't have is coffee in your mouth. Okay, so you got to be able to communicate. And so this is what I want you to say. If you believe this, I want you to say that you have a gift this morning. So you would say, on the count of three, I have a gift. All right? So one, two, three, I have a gift. Do you believe that? That you have a gift. It might not be this great, extravagant gift that you think you would like to have, but nonetheless, it's the gift that God has given you. So again, I have a gift. There's no enthusiasm, right? If I knew I had a gift, I would have some enthusiasm. So I do have a gift. So on the count of three, let's cry one more time, just to make sure we know we're all together on this. I have a gift.
I have a gift.
Thank you, Matthew Broach. Second part of it is, I have a gift and a purpose. Hold on. Do you believe, I like where your enthusiasm is getting better, right? But do you believe that this morning, one, that you do have a gift and that you do have purpose? Right? So I have a gift and a purpose. I have a gift and a purpose. Okay, so we all know where we're at. Awesome. Hey, this morning we're going to be talking about miracles. As you turn to Matthew chapter 9, I'm going to start reading in Matthew chapter 22 just for a second. I just want to kind of remind the church this morning why we were created and what we are created to do. It's not rocket science. It's not difficult. You just admitted that you have a purpose and a gift, right? And so that gift and that purpose is called to do just a couple of things this morning. And so we're going to find out what those are. If you'll turn to Matthew 9, I'm going to just turn to Matthew 22. And believe this morning during the 9 o'clock service, I said the exact same thing. And then I said, hey, we're going over to Colossians because that's what we're studying on Wednesday night. So I had them off key, off kilter within the first 3 minutes. So we're good today, right? All right, you're Matthew 9. I'm in Matthew 22. So listen to this. Hearing Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied this. This is the call of the church. This is, if you ever have any doubt of what you're called to do, or I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, here's the key. This is the church's key right here. Jesus replied, you are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. So if you have any doubt of what you're called to do, you don't know if you lied to yourself and said, I have a gift and I have a purpose, but you feel like you don't, here's the key. Love the Lord your God with all that you have. Love Him with everything. When you don't know what to do, you love Him with everything that you have. Lay down your life and say, Lord, I'll do what you want me to do. And in the same sentence, you love your neighbors the way you love yourself. When you get sick, what do? You take care of yourself, right? Jesus says, love your neighbors as yourself. I can tell you this, our little sweet one I'm going to talk about for a little bit in a minute, she has this diaper rash, and it looks so terrible. And I hate it so bad. I'm thinking, man, was it my fault when I had to change those 4 diapers at 2 in the morning when I put one on, take one off, and all that? But they babies get diaper rash. We all know that. But we want to take care of her. And if she was able to, she would take care of herself, right? But sometimes people are not able to take care of themselves. Sometimes people are hurting so bad they don't know what the right thing to do is. And that's where we come into play. That's when we come in with a gift and a purpose. Right? And when we're confused, we go back to the basics. Love Him with everything that we have. And love your next door neighbor the same way. Love your boss the same way. Love your coworkers the same way. Your students, your peers the same way. Your college classmates the same way. Your college high school buddies the same way. You love them the same. The same way that you're willing to love the Lord your God. The same way that you're willing to love yourself. That's how you're called to love others. All right? So miracles this morning. If you'll go back to Matthew, well, I'm going to go back to Matthew 9. You're already there. In Matthew chapter 9, we're going to pick up at verse 27. We're talking about the 2 blind men that Jesus healed, right? It was a miraculous miracle that he did this. But also, we're going to talk a little bit about how this miracle came to play in his life. And so I want to start out, after I read Scripture, is just share a brief story with you. Matthew chapter 9, verse 27. As Jesus went on from there, 2 blind men followed him, calling out, have mercy on us, son of David. When he had gone indoors, the blind men came to him, and he asked them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" "Yes, Lord," they replied. Then he touched their eyes and said, "According to your faith, will it be done to you?" And their sight was restored. According to your faith, it will be done to you, and your sight is restored. So let's talk about faith real quick. I have a newborn. Her name is Mallory Claire, right? We're battling back and forth. We call her Mallory, Mallory Claire. I like the Mallory Claire sophisticated. There's not much sophistication in my life. We're pretty country, and well, not as country as some of you guys, but we are, we're not the smartest tool in the shed, needless to say. So Mallory Claire brings a little bit of that slick, classic feel to us. But man, she's a miracle. And I'll tell you why she's a miracle. Me and my wife, we have journeyed together for going on 10 years now. And just like any couple, you always want to have kids, right? That's the goal. We were no different. We wanted to have children. We got a little bit, we got married a little bit later than most couples get married. I was 28, which is good. And she was 24. And, you know, we wanted to spend some time together. So the first couple of years of our marriage, it was just about me and her. Started thinking about kids. And we moved to Birmingham, Alabama, and we got pregnant, and right away it happened. It was pretty cool. I was the Sunday pretty vividly. I think my wife texts me and said, "Hey, I got to talk to you as soon as I get there." And then she gets there, and she's like, "Look, don't freak out. Don't react. Don't do anything. I'm pregnant. So I'm not supposed to do anything, right?" And so we get into the pregnancy just a couple of weeks, and she ends up having an ectopic pregnancy. And she was bleeding in her stomach, and one of her tubes had to be removed. And so that was pretty painful. It was truly painful for her in a lot of ways. And as a husband, you can't do anything but stand on the sidelines and be as supportive as you can. And so she gets pregnant again in the last just a few weeks, and we have another miscarriage. Again, it never gets easy when that's told. And we get pregnant for a third time and have our third miscarriage. And so this is where faith really has become evident. And so I don't know if I've even shared this with Marcia, but it's become very evident. Marcia, she wants to be a mom. She's always wanted to be a mom. She's one of the greatest school teachers on the planet. But she's like, I want to be like every other person. I want to be a mom. And, her faith was unwavering. She had a faith like no other. After seeing my wife hurt and be in pain, and if you know me like a little bit more than a casual hello, you know right off the bat, emotions run very thin in my blood. I'm not very emotional. Everything rolls off my shoulders. I don't carry a lot of excess emotion in me. And so the only thing a man knows how to do when their wife is hurt is to fix it. And I couldn't do anything. I couldn't physically heal it. I couldn't make sure it worked the next time. And so I was honestly ready to not try anymore, because I was tired of seeing her pain. The letdown after letdown after letdown. But her unwavering faith is, I want to be a mom. And so we've gone through two adoption classes in two different states. We can get you certified to adopt in no time. We know what home studies are all about. We've done that. We are just through the process here in South Carolina. And then she walks in the bedroom and says, "Here we go again. I'm pregnant." Right? Still joy in the heart, but still that lingering, are we going to miscarry again? And the faith through the whole thing is my wife was unwavering. I learned what faithfulness looks like, not from my own self, but from watching my wife go through these past 3 years of just trial and failure. And easy to get so mad and so frustrated. All I wanted to do was let's focus on adoption. But she had unwavering faith. And so we go to the doctor here in Aiken. He's like, "Well, let's just put you on a baby aspirin. The miracle drug is a baby aspirin." And we got pregnant right away. And we made it through 5 weeks. We made it through 8 weeks. We made it through 20 weeks. Week 30 comes, and we're both like, "Man, let's just get this baby out. Let's get this on." And we go to beach camp. I ride down, and then I ride back. We had a 8-pound, 7-ounce little baby, Mallory Claire, super healthy. Love her to death, man. It's a miracle. I mean, it's truly, it's a miracle on so many levels. But it's unwavering faith, and we're going to learn about unwavering faith in a moment. But it was the unwavering faith that my wife had to say, we're going to have a child. The unwavering faith that Robbie Yarbrough and his family had to pray for his mentor and his accountability partner to say, man, the Lord's going to take care of you. And they sit this morning in preparation for the Lord to take care of his friend. It's a miracle. And every day, miracles happen. Sometimes we just don't see them because sometimes we are too far away from him to know that miracles are happening. So going back to the story, the two blind men says to Jesus, have mercy on us, son of David. So two blind men recognize Christ right away. And they say this is the first time in the New Testament that he's been recognized as son of David. Have mercy on us, son of David. So they recognize, point number one this morning, is they recognize who Christ was. In our relationship with the Lord, we must recognize who Christ is in our lives. If you go over to James chapter 2, you don't have to go over there. I'll just read it to you. James chapter 2, verse 19, listen to this. There's two different types of recognition, of recognizing someone. In James 2, 19, it says this. You believe that there is one God, good. Even the demons believe the same thing, and they shudder. So believing in God is great. It's awesome. But I'll tell you, Satan, he believes in the same thing. Demons, they believe in the same thing. They know that there's a God. But do you know God differently than the way they know God? You know, if we're believers in this morning, we recognize Christ in our life. But if we're teeter-tottering on our relationship, they say, yeah, I know him. Do you know him like the demons know him? Or do you know him like the resurrection, Jesus Christ down on the cross for you? Do you know him that way? Have you surrendered your life to him? Because we can't love him with everything we have until we first surrender our life. And surrender our life looks a lot different than just going, yeah, I know who Christ is in my life. Yeah, I know what he did on the cross for me. Man, I've been to so many Sunday school classes. I've been to so many small groups, so many accountability. I know who Christ is. Yeah, it's great. Even the demons know who Christ is. And they shudder. The difference between the demons and you don't shudder. You're not afraid because you think you know him. Right? Big difference. Even the demons shudder in fear. Point number two this morning, as the two blind men recognized Christ, when they went indoors, the blind men came to him and asked, Jesus asked them this question, do you believe that I am able to do this? Do you have faith in me that I'm able to do this? The blind man's response, yes, Lord, they replied. So number two, we must have an unwavering faith. We must have an unshakable faith. A faith that cannot be broken. A faith that cannot be moved. A faith when we don't want to believe, we believe. Right? We're human. We're going to falter. We're going to fail. But having that unwavering faith, man, we begin to see miracles take place. Robbie's witnessing a miracle this morning. I change a diaper every day. Miracle happening on multiple ends that I'm changing a diaper. And that I get to change a diaper. I'm very thankful that my mother-in-law is here because I often ask her, hey, come check this out, make sure this is right. And she's got that diaper rash. So we got some ointment. And I'm like, is it going in the right place? Is it all good? I want to make sure it's right. Don't want to mess her up. You know, want her off on a good foot. We have to have that unwavering faith. We cannot question. We cannot doubt. We cannot move forward. Listen, if the two blind men moved forward and had a little bit of doubt, they would not be able to see, because listen to the next part. According to your faith, will it be done to you? And their sight was restored. They had unwavering faith in who Christ was. They'd never seen him before. They've only heard about him. But they, in an immediate moment, recognized who he was, son of David, had unwavering faith, believed that he could make you see. Remember, the demons recognize Christ. Point number three, big faith requires an obedient heart. To have big faith, we must have an obedient heart. And if we've recognized him the way John 3:16 declares us to recognize him, and we love him the way we should love him, and we begin to love others the way we should love him, having an unwavering faith leads to an obedient heart. having an obedient heart leads to multiplication of ministry, leads to hurting people become clean, healed, found, restored, redeemed. But if we have a recognition like the demons, we'll have wavering faith daily, and our obedient heart will be slim. We'll move when we want to move. We'll do when we want to do. We won't fall into obedience, right? Because you said this at the beginning of our message, that you have a gift. We've all recognized that we have a gift. Everyone's talented in something, somewhere, in some line. It might be behind the scenes. It might be in front of the scenes. It might be Quasimodo, a lot of different things. But we all have a gift, and we all have a purpose. We were created in His image to do His work, not our work. We were created to do His bidding, not our bidding. We were created to serve Him, not ourselves. And so you ask yourself this morning, what type of recognition do you have in your life of who Christ is? What type of faith do you have in your life? Is it wishy-washy? Is it only when things work out you recognize it? And when things don't work out, do you blame Him? Man, I'm telling you, it is very difficult. And then it's very easy to be mad sometimes and frustrated at the Lord, because we think when we become believers, we think it's supposed to be easy. And we think we're not supposed to ever hurt. And we think we're not supposed to ever react to anything. But man, life is full of hurt and reaction. Let's just ask Paul, right? He was tormented, but his faith was unwavering. He never moved. He recognized who Christ was, the way Christ intended to be recognized. And it's hard. I get it. Man, I lost my dad at 14. We all have stories. Man, it hurts. Life hurts. Life is not all about rewards. But when you find your place, and you find your calling, and you find your identity in Him, the rewards begin to take place. And it is a struggle, because Satan promises you that he will come to steal, kill, and destroy you. He promises us. He tests us. He does it. And he does it in ways that we don't even think of. We might conquer some sin in our life, but the whole time Satan's been working on the other edge. And we've opened that door, and we're not paying attention. And before you know it, Satan has ensnared us and locked us in. And now we're beginning to question a few things. Or we take a break from ministry. It's okay to take breaks from ministry. We all need them. But taking a break is taking a breather. And not sitting on the sideline. And not ever getting back in the game. Right? As we move on from the 3 points, let's move on to the application process. We're going to be in Matthew chapter 9, verse 35. And we're just going to finish the chapter off. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. So right up to this point, Jesus had the disciples with Him, but He was the teacher. He was the healer. He was the worker. It was Him. And all the while, He was training the disciples to get ready to do His work. So disciples were learners, listeners, watchers. They were just observing. They were getting ready. They were watching what Jesus was doing. And then here it is. When He saw the crowds, He had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like a sheep without a shepherd. Then He said to His disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into His harvest field." And then if you read the title of chapter 10, it says Jesus sends out the 12. The transition from the disciples being sideliners, listeners, observers, learners, now they're going to become movers and actionary to take on. But they had to recognize who Christ was in their life. They have to continue to have unwavering faith in who He is, right? And their unwavering faith leads to a heart of obedience. And each of those 12 are very different types of people, those disciples, but they all had a gift and they all had a purpose. And their gift and their purpose was to do one thing, to glorify the Lord Jesus Christ in whatever they did. Whatever your gift is this morning, He's calling you to glorify Him the very best way you can. He doesn't want you to be a learner anymore. For some of you this morning, you have sat in a pew from the time you were born until today. You've never got engaged in the church. You slip out, at the altar call. You leave when the singing starts at the end of the service. And you feel good. And it's a great time. We're so glad that you're here. But you miss the second part of this miracle of getting engaged in the church. Man, there's so many different ministries here that need volunteers, that need people to serve in. We need people to count goldfish for VBS. We need people to lead small groups in our adult ministries. Gary Farina runs a single ministry. He needs some help because he's doing single ministry. And he had 60 at a cookout. Y'all didn't get the joke. It's okay. We need volunteers. The church needs volunteers. Listen to this. For the last 8.5 months, even this morning, I would sit out there on Sundays or I'd walk around campus and everyone goes, well, how are the two ladies doing? How are the women doing? And they're referring to my wife and to Mallory, Claire, and spit that out there. And they're so excited to talk about Mallory. And I love to talk about her already, and I love to talk about how healthy everyone is because it's a miracle. But so many people have also made these comments. Did you get enough sleep? Because you're not going to sleep again. It's over for you, buddy. No more sleeping for you. Your life will never be the same. It's changing. And then my least favorite one, well, you better start saving up for the wedding now. We're not even thinking about a wedding. You know, conversation in our house has changed a little bit. It is no longer about what are we going to do for the weekend. It's like, should we get our ears pierced? When should we do that? I'm like, I don't know. My ear ain't pierced. I don't know when I'm supposed to do that. Right? I don't even want to go hear her scream. I see, you know. All these different things, all these conversations that are going on. And what if for some odd reason, when we were together, we talked about what Christ was doing in our lives? We talked about, man, I shared at my work, and Johnny, man, he just needs prayer. He's got cancer or something's going on. Or Johnny came to know the Lord, man, I'm trying to get him plugged in here. Or, hey, man, I invited 4 people, and they're here this morning. Man, this is what Christ showed me. This is what Christ is doing in my life. See, we don't hear those conversations that much. Well, if we begin to hear those conversations, if those things started happening more and more, I can tell you a couple of things that would happen. One, it would be hard to find a place to sit down on a Sunday morning. It would be a challenge. It would be hard. Another thing, our volunteers wouldn't be getting burned out because we have so many volunteers wanting to volunteer. We'd have a great rotation set up. So when people needed a break, they could take a couple of weeks off and get right back in the game. But we don't have that big volunteer base. And if we had that big volunteer base, you know what else would happen? Another thing would happen would be the gifts that you have and the purpose that you have, we could create new ministries, new opportunities, new opportunities for the sick to be healed, new opportunities for the hurt to be restored, new opportunities for people to come to their faith, new opportunities for people to take the next step. But right now, we're a church just like any other church. This is not just about our church. It's about the church. But right now, here's what's happening. There's open seats in every church. Volunteers are getting burned out left and right and are falling off. Ministry opportunities are becoming smaller and smaller because of the burnout the volunteers have. And then everyone begins to look at the pastors across America and the staff and go, well, man, the church is falling apart. No, the church is not falling apart. We're just deciding to do nothing about the church. And it's not the staff or pastor's responsibilities across every church in America to make sure every ministry is running well. You said it at the beginning. You have a gift and you have a purpose. It's about getting engaged. It's about volunteering. It's about giving of your time, man, because you're not giving it to me. You're not giving it to Gary or to Bill or to Logan or to anybody else on our staff that I just left out. You're not giving it to them. You're giving it to Him. See, sometimes we look at it with the wrong perspective and the wrong views. Well, I'm tired of Him asking me to do this. He's not asking you to do this. The Lord is asking you to do this. This is what it takes to run, to volunteer in this ministry. This is what it takes to make this ministry successful. In order for us to win Aiken, the church must become alive. In order for us to heal the sick and to redeem the broken, the church must become alive. One of the biggest opportunities this church is going to have is to reach the community is in a couple of weeks. You know what it is? VBS, Vacation Bible School. And I told the first service, look, man, if I have grandkids coming to the house, you know what time I'm going to plan for them to come? The week of VBS. You know why? 9 to 12. They're good. I can take a break. I can still make my Waffle House run. You know what I mean? I can promise you two things. Mallory will attend VBS. Mallory Claire, sorry. And Mallory Claire will also attend other VBSs. Right? She's going to be engaged. Right? In just a couple of weeks, we already have over 250 kids sign up for VBS. And listen, we haven't even started promoting it really heavily yet. With 250 kids, you get 250 more in the next 3 or 4 weeks, that means we need volunteers. We need people willing to step up and say, hey, you know what, I'll serve that week. I'll count goldfish. I'll count gummy worms. I'll hold a yellow sign up and walk around. You know, I'll stay in the kitchen and help do those things. It takes an army to make it successful. It doesn't take Scott Scheitz and his 3 staff members to make it successful. It takes you, the church, to make that event God-honoring, God-glorifying, God-lifting. Well, Jason, children's ministry is not my thing. It's okay. It's not mine either. I don't like children's ministry. Every time they ask me to go speak, I'm like, really? I have a heart and I can't do it. And I go and do it and it turns out okay, right? We must be willing. If it's not children's ministry, we have singles ministry. We have a choir and orchestra. We have modern worship set up, tear down crew. Look, there's some people that get here at 10 o'clock. This doesn't magically appear. They need help. Volunteer. Well, I can lift something. If you can lift something, raise your hand. All right. We found a niche. We can lift. Just lift. Just lift and move. Well, Jason, I love student ministry. We'll go down to the mill. We'll put you to work. We'll put you to work. Is that right? Is that a true statement? There's a lot of my volunteers are right there. Yes, it is. Man, look, I'll tell you about our student ministry. We had about running about 80 to 95, and then like 6 weeks ago, we capped out at 215. Have no idea what happened. Don't know what we did right, and we're trying to bottle that up to continue to do it. But you know what it takes? It takes volunteers to do it right. And it's not just the student ministry. It's the children's ministry. It's the singles ministry. It's all the ministries of our church. We need our hands and feet. The moment we become the hands and feet, the moment He becomes even more glorified, the moment that people go, man, what's happening at Millbrook? I need to get my kid over there. I need to get in that Wednesday night Bible study. I want to know what's going on. Well, good. Come on. But they can't do it if they don't hear about it. And they can't hear about it if we're not engaged in doing it. And they can't be engaged in doing it if we have sour tongue every once in a while. Well, I don't like that loud music, and I don't like what they did with that video, or, man, I can't believe we're not out yet, and all these different comments. Look, let's take this approach. Glass half full. And we're doing the Lord's work. It's about Him. It's not about us. And so this morning, as I close, I was hoping Scott could make it out, but I don't think he could, of his children's ministry. I want to invite everyone to the altar this morning to pray. And I want to pray for just a few things. I want to pray for our church. I want to pray for the church. I want to pray for the Lord to do miraculous things. If you don't know this, the baptisms, Gary said last week, we're up to 73. Man, we done smashed last year, and it's just July 3rd. Man, the Lord is up to something. And when we see miracles happening because we've recognized who He was in our unwavering faith, in our heart of obedience, and we begin to see these miracles, man, it becomes contagious.